expected a smaller crowd tonight, but I'm thankful to see that we have a relatively larger crowd than I was expecting, so that's good. Hopefully you guys can help carry us through this study. I think each year that passes by for me, and honestly, it started a couple years ago when I taught a class on Psalms, and I think that just really started this kind of fire in my life of just loving the wisdom literature of the Bible. Not just the Psalms, but I've never really pulled away from them since then, but Proverbs. And so I'm glad to have Ashley kind of guide us into Ecclesiastes, which can be, I think, a little bit more challenging book of literature to get into. But Ashley's done an excellent job leading us in this study. And one irony that I think there is about Ecclesiastes is, Ecclesiastes is a book of questions, right? It's a book that leaves us kind of going, yeah, why did you do that, God? Or, yeah, why is it that way? Whether it causes us to ask questions or whether the question is asked in the book itself. And the irony there is Ecclesiastes itself doesn't have all the answers, right? If you didn't have the rest of the Bible, we would be left wondering, right? And that's what we look. When Solomon looks under the sun for the answers to all these questions he asks, he doesn't find them. Right, the answers lie elsewhere, and we are fortunate to have the rest of the Bible, to have the end of the story, and to know where we can find the answers to all these. But I love that it does prompt us to ask some of those questions, right? Because sometimes we see injustices in the world, and we see things that are unfair, and Solomon points those things out and says, "Why does this happen?" Right, and he kind of has this intercourse, discourse with God about those questions, and I think it causes us to seek deeper answers. So we're going to jump into chapter 9, but before we do, it starts off with, but all this. And so since humans, we added the chapter divisions, I'm going to jump back, but I'm not really going to do a lot of digging into the end of chapter 8, starting in verse 16. And Solomon says, "When I applied my heart to know wisdom and to see the business that is done on earth, how neither day nor night do one's eyes see sleep. Then I saw all the work of God, that man cannot find out the work that is done under the sun. How much man may toil in seeking, he will not find it out. Even though a wise man claims to know, he cannot find it out. But in all this," okay? So as we jump in, right, we kind of see that Solomon, to set this up, was looking down at earth, and he was seeking to know, from looking at the earth, what's the work of God, what's the work of man? And he's trying to find the answers to all these questions, right? Why is this man, the man gifted by God with the greatest wisdom ever to walk the face of the earth, except Jesus Christ, the Son of God? He's trying to find the answers to these questions and struggling. Right, and so I think we can take a little bit of a kind of like let a breath out and think, okay, if I struggle with some of these questions sometimes too, that's okay, right? It's okay to struggle with these questions. It's okay not to know the answer, right? Solomon had doubts about some of these things, and Solomon, in some ways, is not the best example to us of his faith, right? He was a man that walked away from the Lord through a great part of his life. I believe he came back, but we don't know the answer to that for sure either. So anyways, let's jump into chapter 9. Okay. So let's start off with the first two verses. But all this I laid to heart, examining it all, how the righteous and the wise and their deeds are in the hand of God. Whether it is love or hate, man does not know, both are before him. It is the same for all, since the same events happens to the righteous and the wicked, to the good and the evil, to the clean and the unclean, to him who sacrifices and him who does not sacrifice. As the good one is, so is the sinner, and he who swears is as he who shuns an oath. All right, this is a little bit bleak, right? Like it kind of starts off, when we look and you see, okay, the righteous, the wise, all their deeds are before God. And you think like, yeah, I can get behind that. I'm one of them, right? It's how we want to look at ourselves. And then all of a sudden you go into verse 2 and it's kind of like, wait, you know what? It's actually the same for everyone. Righteous, the wicked, guy that gives an oath and keeps it, guy who breaks an oath. Doesn't really matter, right? All these people experience the same life. They're experiencing the same events, all these things that are happening before God to you who would consider yourself righteous. Same things happen to the wicked. You see it, I see it. All right? As to the good, as to the sinner. So if Ecclesiastes is prompting us to ask a question, what's the question that we're left with here? No wrong answer. Solomon didn't tell me the answer. What's the point? That's what I have written right here is my first question, okay? Me and Becky, we're on the same page, all right? What's the point, okay? What's the point? Why try? Does this life have any meaning, right? You can look, and so whether things are going great for you, right, and you've been blessed, and you would look at yourself and think like, yeah, I'm doing pretty good, okay? I can look over and see a guy that is totally living in sin, someone that is not faithful to the Lord, and from an under-the-sun perspective, he would say the exact same thing about himself. I'm doing pretty good, right? And so he'd kind of go like, well, why am I doing all this stuff for God? Like, what's the point? Okay? That could be a thing that we can look at. And then the flip side of that is, right, like, what if I don't think things are going good for me? It's almost worse, right? Things are not going well for me, right? Maybe you're thinking financially, maybe you're thinking about your health, your family, your job, certain situations that are maybe within your control and certain situations that are outside, they're not going great. And then you look over at someone else that you don't think deserves it at all, and they're a wicked person, and everything is just, man, things are going peachy for them. Life is good, right? They walked by you the other day and were wearing a shirt that said life is good. And you were like, man, what's up with that guy? He is not living a good life, but life's great for him, and life's terrible for me, right? It causes us to ask the question. And yet, one of my favorite psalms, when I'm maybe struggling with these kinds of feelings, and I have, and I do, is Psalm 73. Wish we could read it all and go into it, but we're not going to. I'm going to read the first three verses, and then I'm going to read 16 and 17. This is a psalm of Asaph, who would have been a contemporary of David. He wrote songs and psalms. Likely Solomon knew Asaph. Likely Solomon had read this psalm. Truly God is good to Israel, to those who are pure in heart. But as for me, my feet had almost stumbled, my steps had nearly slipped, for I was envious of the arrogant when I saw the prosperity of the wicked. Here's the answer, though, okay, in verse 16. But when I thought how to understand this, it seemed a wearisome task to me until I went into the sanctuary of God. Then I discerned their end. Okay, and that's where I'm saying, like, sometimes Ecclesiastes doesn't give us the answer to that, right? It prompts us to ask the question, right? It kind of points out this injustice that we see, and yet we look around, right, and we can see, oh, it actually, things aren't the same for us. What's the point, right? Like, yeah, maybe they are enjoying some things that I'm envious of in this life. Maybe I wish things were better for me under the sun right now. And yet, my end is going to be better than their end. And that's not the reason I do it, right? Oh, I want to be better than them. I want to win. That's not the purpose. But that's something that can give me contentment, can help me find purpose where Solomon was unable to find it, seemingly. Any comments before we kind of move on? But we will continue in this vein. Ms. Joanne. Mm-hmm.
It rains on the just and the unjust.
Yep, absolutely.
It shines on the just and the unjust.
Yeah. Rains on the just and the unjust, the sun shines. I mean, and we see that, right? That God is taking care of all those people, right? If only good things happened to those who are faithful to the Lord, who would be faithful to the Lord? Pretty much everybody, right? But would they do it out of a love for the Lord? No, they'd do it for the reward that they would get in this life. All right, starting on in verse 3, this is an evil in all that is done under the sun, that the same event happens to all. Also, the hearts of the children of man are full of evil, and madness is in their hearts while they live, and after that they go to the dead. Whew, bleak, okay? Same thing to all. Children's hearts are evil, then they die. Verse 4, but he who is joined with the living has hope. Okay, think on that, right? Think on that, because I want to come back to it. For a living dog is better than a dead lion, okay? People didn't admire dogs the way we do nowadays back then, right? Like being compared to a dog would have been very insulting. For the living know that they will die, but the dead know nothing. And they have no more reward, for the memory of them is forgotten. Their love and their hate and their envy have already perished, and forever they have no more share in all that is done under the sun. Okay, so I mean, it's kind of this bleak thing, right? Like, hey, we're going to live, you're going to have this, everything you do, everything you feel, it's all going to die, and then there's nothing. And yet, there's hope, right? And so the question that I ask when I see this is, why do the living still have hope? Okay? Why do the living still have hope? Why do the living still have hope under the sun? Maybe there's two questions here. Under the sun, why would the living still have hope? Yeah, I mean, God's with us as our companion, and ultimately this life after death is something that while you're alive, you still can find that, okay? 2 Corinthians 4, verses 16, starting in verse 16, and I'll go through 5, verse 1. So we do not lose heart, though our outer self is wasting away, our inner self is being renewed day by day. For the light momentary affliction is preparing us for an eternal weight of glory beyond all comparison. As we look not to the things that are seen, but to the things that are unseen. For the things that are seen are transient, but the things that are unseen are eternal. For we know that if the tent that is our earthly home is destroyed, we have a building from God, a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. And so it's interesting that Solomon is focusing his discourse on the under the sun things, right? The things that are seen, the things of earth, right? What 2 Corinthians might call the outer man, the outer self, right? And when that's all we're focusing on, we don't really have a lot of hope. And yet the living have hope because they can still find more. Once you're dead, right? If you never grasped a hold of that hope through Jesus, right? If you never found Jesus, if you never submitted to him during your life, then when you're dead, you have no hope. There's no hope of finding that after death. It's gone. But the living have hope. And so you could almost call the inner man, you know, you kind of almost have this inner man, outer man, under the sun, under heaven. I don't really know what the better term there is, right? But it's kind of the spiritual versus the physical. And that's what we're seeing here, is this kind of way that we're looking at life through this chapter of Ecclesiastes is really kind of focusing from a negative standpoint on, what if this life is all there is? And if this life is all there is, then these injustices that we see, they're very unfair. Right? If this life is all there is, then yeah, what is the point? Right? And sometimes, even those of us in this room with a strong faith have doubts. Right? Sometimes we have those kind of low moments, right? Where kind of like David was mentioning on Sunday, when Satan was tempting Jesus, right? Now, whether that was him physically coming to him or whether it's that voice in our head going, hey, you know what? You've been living a really good life. Why isn't God blessing you? Right? Sometimes we've asked ourselves that, whether we really did or whether it was kind of in the back of our head bumping around. And I think, you know, we look here and we see asking these questions is good, but finding the answers is better. All right, my little, like, first six verses turned into a little mini lesson. We're going to run out of time, so I'm going to jump ahead. If anybody has any comments, though, I we'll take them. All right. Verses 7 through 10. Enjoy life. I think it gets a little more upbeat here, although it's still hard to read. Solomon kind of walks this wire where it's almost like no matter what he says in this chapter, you could read it almost as sarcastic. So I'm not real sure like how much he's really saying take joy or how much he's kind of like enjoy it because that's all there is, you know, kind of thing. But I'm going to take this section as positive because I try to be a glass half full kind of guy. All right, starting in verse 7. Go eat your bread with joy, drink your wine with a merry heart, for God has already approved what you do. Let your garments be always white. Let not the oil be lacking on your head. So Ecclesiastes prompts us to kind of ask these questions, but we see this is a little bit of an upbeat passage, right? He's saying God's blessed you, right? But he's not pointing out these huge, massive blessings, right? He's kind of saying in a way, like, take joy in the little things, right? Like, God's giving you bread, okay? I mean, that's basically just saying, like, God's giving you food, right? He's not talking about fancy food. He's not talking about, like, oh, wow, you got to go eat at Acre or Hamilton's or something like that. That's not what's on the table here, right? It's just bread, and you need to take joy and enjoy that, right? Like, a glass of wine or juice, right? Like something more than water is what you got to drink today. Okay, I mean, we probably all had a cup of coffee or tea or something that wasn't water today, maybe. If you didn't, man, I got to have my coffee. But, you know, and just take joy. Coffee's not like a luxury item for us at least. And yet it's something that we can take a lot of joy in, getting up and just having that piece of toast and a cup of coffee, right? It's the little things, I think. And if you do those with a merry heart, I think he's saying, you know, God's approved of this, right? Like, God's given you these things. Enjoy them and take comfort in those blessings. And maybe it's a cool garment that you can have, an oil for your head, right? The little things. I'm going to move on from that to verse 9 because I do want to finish, and I know we'll probably spend a little more time on a couple of the passages that come ahead. All right, this is a tough one because my wife's in the room. But enjoy life with the wife whom you love all the days of your vain life that he has given you under the sun, because that is your portion in life and in your toil at which you toil under the sun. And it's great. While I do sense a little bit of that same tone here from Solomon, you know, as you reflect on this, right, he's telling you to enjoy this because the demands that marriage are is to include is the joy of giving affection, right? Lifelong encouragement, companionship, the responsibilities and duties that you share in life. And the one thing that this kind of irony that hit me as I was studying this is Solomon, wisest man to ever walk the earth, not counting Jesus Christ. Okay? Wisest man, right? There is probably nothing that I can think of in terms of wisdom where I would surpass Solomon. And yet, there are many of us in this room, and I would include myself in this, that can claim this one thing, and it's this passage right here. Solomon has no understanding of a faithful, committed marriage. Right? He doesn't know that joy. He never knew that joy. Right? Solomon had 1,000 wives. I don't think you could have 2 wives and understand this passage fully. But to have 1,000, he would understand it less than most. Right? Like, he understood marriage, I think, from a very different and probably jaded perspective. And so, I don't know, that was just kind of a little irony that, you know, the focus of what would have, right, enjoying life with the wife whom you love, right? If you love your wife, you serve your wife. You put your wife first, right? Like, you put her needs before your needs. A man with 1,000 wives doesn't understand that. And so there is, like, I guess, some interesting irony that he's writing about this. And yet, in Proverbs 18:22, he also wrote about marriage. So I think in Proverbs 18:22, he said, "He who finds a wife finds a good thing and obtains favor from the Lord." And so, I don't know, as I thought on this, I almost could see Solomon looking at his life, right? And he was pursuing all these things. And he pursued marriage from a diplomatic standpoint. He pursued marriage of a, what can this do for my kingdom? What can this do for my family? You know, he pursued it from a physical perspective, I'm sure, and explored all those avenues with his marriages and his concubines and all those things. And yet he didn't find joy in that. That wasn't fulfilling to him, and it wouldn't be for anyone. All those things, they fade with time, right? And yet, I could imagine him in kind of his wise state as he's looking around and trying to find the meaning of life under the sun, seeing a simple man, right, outside of Jerusalem, not a rich man, enjoying life with the wife of his youth. And Solomon thinking, you know, that guy's been given a gift by God. And appreciating that. All right, I'm waxing poetic a little bit. So what do y'all look at when you see this passage? What are we pulling from it, and how can this help us in our marriage and in our portion in life? All right, I'm going to tell you a little bit more what I think. I think there's two ways to look at this too, right? He's kind of looking at it and saying, enjoy the life with the wife you've given under the sun. Enjoy this portion and your toil in which you toil under the sun, right? So I think he's showing us that even in those hard times, God's given us good things, right? Sometimes life is hard, and yet it's clinging to those good gifts that God has given us, right? And in this example, he's saying, cling to your wife. Cling to your husband, right? In your toil, in your day-to-day struggles, those are things that you can pull in and that can help you come together. And whether it's, you know, this whole passage, right, it's taking joy in those small things under the sun, bread, you know, merriment, and the drinking, and the oil, and the clothes, and your wife, and all those things are things that he is pointing for us to look at. Verse 10 says, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might, for there is no work or thought or knowledge or wisdom in Sheol to which you are going. Go ahead. In the hand is worth two in the bush, you know, I mean, and there's that, if you didn't hear that, the grass always looks greener on the other side, and in all these things, that applies to you, right? If you're happy with your bread, there's always someone on the other side of the table, on the other side of the fence, right, that they've got better bread, right? You think, man, I wish I had this, right? And sometimes, how often do we think that about the physical things? And it could be, you know, I mean, marriage, and that's one thing where I don't think Solomon understood, that a committed and loving marriage, a life that you're going to enjoy with your wife, with your husband, it's not always roses, right? Sometimes it is, but sometimes it's hard, and sometimes you struggle together, right? But that makes your marriage stronger, and in those moments, if all you're looking at is how good life can be for me under the sun, then all of a sudden the grass does look greener on the other side. And I don't think those people in the end take much joy in that. But at the time, maybe they try to.
Great. Yeah, also, I think this passage really sums up at the very last thought, because it's talking about enjoy this, enjoy that, enjoy all these things, because pretty soon you're going to be dead.
Yeah.
That's it. Like, you're going to be dead.
Yeah. In the end, so, I mean, in that last comment up there says, none of these things will be with you in death. Right? And it's kind of like, it's kind of this positive passage, and then it's like this last thing. It's like, and enjoy it now, because we're all going to die, right? Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die, right? And that's one way to look at this passage.
Read and see about us in society.
Absolutely. Yeah, the alternative, and in the end, where you are going, if you didn't choose the better things, you will be choosing a much worse thing there. Yeah, great thoughts. So in verse 10, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. I mean, this is one of those things that it's kind of the first half of this verse is almost like a bumper sticker, right? You're out there. If you're going to work, work as hard as you can. And, you know, if you're a parent, this is the kind of thing like we say to our kids all the time, right? Doesn't really matter what it is, right? If they're going to play a soccer game, right? You just say, hey, I want you to do your best, you know? And it's kind of like, I don't care if you score 5 goals. I don't care if you score any goals. But I don't want to look out there and see you not doing your best, right? Like, that will burn you up. They didn't score, whatever. They didn't score because they were being lazy. Then all of a sudden it's like, we're going to talk after this game, right? Same thing in school, right? Maybe they get their grades back and you think like, hey, you made a, you know, 88. Okay, hey, that was a tough test. Good job. I know you studied hard, right? But then maybe they make a bad grade or a grade that you don't think is that great. And you know they were up playing video games last night and didn't study, and you're going, you know, you didn't even try on this. And that's what makes us mad. That's what makes us upset as a parent. And yet, even within ourselves, right, when we do our work day to day, we get a satisfaction, right? If we know we went to work and it was a tough day, whatever it is we're doing, right, it was tough, but we did the best we could do, we worked hard, we tried our best, and we got some stuff accomplished, and it was still hard, right? We can walk away kind of with our head held high saying, well, I gave it my best. I did a good job. I'm going to go back tomorrow. I'm going to hit that problem again, right? When we do our best, we feel good about it, right? And so there is kind of this under-the-sun benefit from this. And yet, if we look over into Colossians chapter 3, Colossians 3, Colossians 3:23 through 24, we see an additional benefit here. Whatever you do, work heartily as for the Lord and not for men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the inheritance as your reward. You are serving the Lord Christ, right? And so there's another reason that we would work hard here, right? I mean, working hard in life can take us far, okay? And that's great. Right? Like, you work hard, maybe you can make more money if you work hard. Maybe you can get more benefit in this life if you work hard. Right? And there is some benefit in those things. And yet, the greater benefit would be that people know our work ethic and know our honesty and our character, right? Those things, they go together, right? When you know someone that has a job and that you work with and they're just lazy, right? You think like, oh man, they're always late. They always leave early. I mean, they leave early for lunch. They come back. They don't do a good job, right? Like, aside from the fact that they're not working hard, what do you think about a person like that? You don't have a very high view of them. And so if we're working hard because we're working for the Lord, right, what if that person that you thought was, like, so lazy and worthless and, like, you honestly, like, really wish they weren't a part of your team because you're always having to like pick up the slack for that person because they're not doing their fair share. What if that person said, hey, you know what? Like, I want you to come to church with me. Well, you'd probably be like, no thanks. You know, like, that person is not a very good reflection of the kind of person that you would want to worship with. Now let's turn that on ourselves and think, like, what if you are that person, right? Like, why do we work hard for the Lord, right? We're in here, I think we're kind of saying like, hey, work hard, you're going to get a little bit of benefit under the sun. But then when we look in Colossians, he's saying work hard as if you're working for the Lord because you are working for the Lord, right? The Lord's given you this job. The Lord has blessed you with these things, and you need to use those things, right, as stewards, right? I think of David's lesson on stewardship, right? And it just like, man, that hit home with me that it was like, the Lord's given me all this stuff. It's not mine. So I need to use all the blessings he's given me, whether physical or opportunities, and use those for him and reflect him in all that I'm doing. And so, you know, we can't just work later so we can enjoy it now. But, you know, if we're working, we're working for God, not only for ourselves. Any thoughts on this? I'm sure there's other people in the room that can, like, say what I said so much better because y'all just did a minute ago for sure. All right. I like this passage. I mean, and it's one of those, this alone, again, kind of motivating, this little snippet of this passage is really good. But then when you pair it with the New Testament, I think it takes us and gives us so much more. All right, verses 11 and 12. I'm going to read them both before we run out of time. But again, I saw under the sun, the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, nor the bread to the wise, nor riches to the intelligent, nor favor to those with knowledge, but time and chance happen to them all. For man does not know his time, like fish that are taken in an evil net, like birds that are caught in a snare. So the children of man are snared at an evil time when it suddenly falls upon them. All right, what is the question that Solomon causes us to ask here? What do we ask when we read this passage? I see a series of questions. Okay, maybe like the overall question would be like, why isn't life more predictable? Right? Like if this is all there is, you know, like maybe from our modern perspective, right? Like in an evolutionary culture and society, right? Like the strong should always win. Right? The strong survive. The weak die. Right? The swift, who should win the race? The swift. Okay? If me and Usain Bolt raced anytime ever, right? Like, I would never win. Right? Like, that would never happen. And if I did, you'd be like, what happened there? Like, he must have, like, hurt himself or something, right? Like, that wouldn't happen. The swift typically wins the race. Right? Who would you expect to have bread? A wise man or a fool? You would think, well, if they both don't have bread, then I would expect the wise man to be wise enough to know how to get bread, to take it from the fool, whatever the case may be, right? Who do you think would be rich, right? Like you think like when you were in high school and you were going through and you thought like, man, who's going to be the wealthiest kid? It's going to be the kid that's making straight A's, right? It's going to be the valedictorian of your class. You're going to think like, man, that kid or that girl or that guy, they're going places, right? They're super smart. Okay, and we can kind of go on from there. Who do you think would be favored, right? Like, who do you give favor to, right? Like, you give people that, like, help you, right? And a lot of times, it's not people that are physically giving you stuff. It's people that are giving you advice, right? Like, men and women that find my favor, or men and women that when I'm struggling, I can go to them, and they can offer me advice and counsel and help, right? The wise, the knowledgeable find favor. And yet, what this passage is telling us is, that's not always how things are, right? That is not always how things are. And then we kind of think, well, that's not really fair, right? But one thing these traits all have in common, it kind of goes back to what Nathan had said, is we're all going to die, okay? And so these traits that we're mentioning here that would maybe give us advantage in this life, I don't have any belief that in the next life, we're all, you know, there are going to be those with greater wisdom and greater speed and greater swiftness, and that those traits are what's going to give us an advantage, right? The things that are going to help us after this life is over is, were you faithful to the Lord? That's it. It's the only question that's going to matter, right? If there's a race, we can all win, right? There's not just one winner to this race, right? We can all win. We all get to say and make the right choice there. And then in verse 12, it kind of makes that clear. But hey, you know what? Man doesn't know his time, right? And so what's this saying? We're all going to die, and we don't know when, right? It's kind of, again, one of those things, right? You might have another category here. The healthy will get long life, right? And yet, I think we've all seen examples, whether we personally know one or not, where you think of someone, it's like, man, how did this happen? They ate well. They ran. They always did everything right. They ate organic food. You name it. They did it. They were super healthy. And then, boom, 42 years old, die. And you're like, how did that happen? That's not fair. I know this other guy that's 88 years old, smoked every day, drinks, 100 pounds overweight. You just keep going with the list, right? Healthy as a clam. Right? And you're just kind of like, how is that? How does that work? And you're just like, well, genetics. Some people got it, some people don't, right? It's kind of the same concept, right? Life is not always fair. Life's not always fair under the sun. And yet, because of Jesus, it doesn't have to be fair, right? A fair life is a life where I go to hell. A fair life is a life where you go to hell. And yet, Jesus said, you know what? I'm going to take your sin upon myself. I'm going to die in your place so that, you know, all these things you complain about not being fair, you know what? I'm going to live the least fair life ever. And I'm going to do that as an example for you. And so that's where Solomon, he didn't have that part of the story, but we do, and how blessed we are to have it. Proverbs 21:30. Proverbs 21:30. No wisdom, no understanding, no counsel can avail against the Lord. Okay? When we're against God, none of these things will stack up. All right, I'm going to very quickly go through the rest of the chapter. Starting in verse 13, I have seen this example of wisdom under the sun, and it seemed great to me. All right, so Solomon tells a story of this poor man against a city, and he thinks this is a great story. But in verse 14, there was a little city with few men in it, and a great king came against it and besieged it, building great siege works against it. But there found in it a poor, wise man, and by his wisdom he delivered the city. Yet no one remembered that poor man. But I say that wisdom is better than might, though the poor man's wisdom is despised and his words are not heard. Nobody remembered him, right? And I don't know if nobody ever remembered him in that city, or if Solomon's point here is really that eventually we all die. And kind of that point, right? Like when we think of, again, I think it was Sunday, right? It was your great grandparents. Like, who knows their names? Who knows what they did, right? Like, the memory of us will fade. Even great men that do great things and save a whole city, the memory of them still fades. It goes away with time. And then eventually it's kind of like, oh, maybe I heard that name in a class. I don't remember much about him. Right? In a worldview where death is the end, Solomon was upset that the memory of this great man didn't live on. And yet the question is, if nobody knows or remembers, then why? Right? But the words of the wise, heard in quiet, are better than shouting among rulers and fools. Wisdom is better than weapons of war, but one sinner destroys much. Solomon recognized that even though wisdom was rarely appreciated, it was greater than strength. It was superior and should be heard over the shouts of fools. Wisdom is better, but he also recognized the damage one man can do. And I don't think that is greater appreciated than after Solomon's death, how quickly his son, one man, squandered so much of what Solomon had built. All right. Thank you for your time, everybody.